We are ready. Let's all stand and pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so this is the second Wednesday, June 28th. Official commission meeting. Approval of the agenda. Any changes to the agenda from staff?
Nope.
We've got an executive session pursuant to RCW 42-30-110. Any decisions in that executive session?
No.
How long for that?
Small.
15. All right. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Consent agenda. Anybody had a chance to look through the consent agenda?
We did. I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Public comments not related to the agenda. Must be summer. All right, going on, moving on to section 5, second reading, we have nothing on that, so we'll move on to section 6, first reading, we have nothing on that, and we are down to section 7, regular business, part A, FAA Airport Improvement Program, grant authorizing, resolution number 667-17. Do you want to kick
that
off, Sam?
I think Eric will. Eric, you're
on that.
So just very briefly, I think the materials in your packet are sufficiently explanatory as to the reason behind the resolution that's before you. Even though the federal monies have been appropriated for phase one of the runway rehab project, it nevertheless is a requirement that the commission of the sponsor in this case, the Port of Fort Townsend, approve an authorizing resolution that allows us to proceed with an airport improvement program grant application to the Federal Aviation Administration to formally secure the monies that have been appropriated. So, again, it's a straightforward matter of an authorizing resolution. I think there might be some discussion that we engage in either at this point or perhaps with respect to the next agenda item, which is the contract to conduct the phase one engineering and environmental work that we can engage in. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I'm good. I've been reading all the materials. I expected we'd have some questions from the audience.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
I've got one, Eric. So how does, and we probably should have talked about this before tonight, but how, if we go into the professional services contract with Reed Middleton and we determine that, we may put this off, we may not improve it, but you already are authorized on part A, 667, to be looking for that money, how does the timing of those two issues work itself out?
Well, I guess in the event that, for instance, just to engage in hypotheticals here, the commission were to conclude that the condition of the runway didn't warrant moving forward at this time based on an updated pavement condition assessment that's being conducted this summer by WashDOT Aviation, or at least the contract manufacturer of WashDOT Aviation. There is language within the contract, actually, that, as I understand it, allows termination of the agreement.
Okay.
So we also have in passing one of the scope of services, outline kind of this initial meeting with airport stakeholders, kind of as part of the project kickoff to try to get a common understanding as to the methodology and approach used in conducting the pavement condition assessment, which was the basis for determining that runway improvements or runway rehabilitation would be required in 2018.
Right.
So I think there is a decision point where the commission, retains the ability to turn the switch off if it chooses to do so.
Yeah, and if I might add to that, I have had discussions with Washington State Department of Transportation Aviation Division that will be conducting a new round of paper assessments, and they will be conducting those this summer. They should be starting them really here in the next couple of weeks. They are going to make every effort to move Port Townsend up early on that list so that we can have the results of that for, hopefully in time for this meeting. Went on to let them know there was questions from the commission and some members of the community whether or not pavement condition did warrant moving forward. They said at this point in their analysis, yes, that is supported. However, if the updated pavement assessment did not warrant that, as they put it, but really rather quite succinctly, we only have about enough money to do about a quarter to a third of the airports that we need to in any given year. So we're not going to spend it on airports that don't need it. That is a subjective statement. I'm sure anybody can critique it, but I think that they're all on board with really looking at the new pavement assessment and then having a check-in before we move forward with it.
And I don't want to jump ahead to the next agenda item, but the section of the contract that I was referencing is paragraph 29A, which is on page 25 of the dispatcher. So it doesn't have a 1% termination for convenience.
Yeah, it's still, the only question I have is the part A is we're giving you the ability to go after the grant. And what's confusing is we don't even know how much this is going to. I mean, if we do a full runway rebuild, maybe that's X number of dollars. Let's say it's $1 million. If we did a partial grind where we just grind it off the top and put it back down, that could be $500,000. So I'm confused, and I'm not really looking for an answer because we're not going to get one, but I'm confused how we can go for the grant without knowing what the actual amount is because we haven't actually determined what the status of it is. Does that make sense?
Well, I guess I would make the case that we have determined what the state of the runway is. The methodology that was used in the 2012 pavement condition index is the one that strictly adheres to the FAA circular for how those analyses are to be conducted. But that also was conducted in a manner that was consistent with the Washington State Airport's pavement management system. It's the way the state working through the aviation division of WASHDOT does these analyses.
Yeah.
So it may be the case that an updated analysis would find that the anticipated deterioration from 2012 to the present day had not occurred at quite the rate that was anticipated. The monies were programmed anticipating this schedule. Now, if it's determined that we don't need to do it in this moment, I think, I would anticipate being able to work with the FAA to move the timing of the project forward. What this is about, though, just to be really clear, is only phase one design and engineering and environmental.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to your larger question is that this is for the phase one design and engineering. There are going to be two alternatives presented, most of this being driven by whether or not we receive a modification to standard to go to keep our shed section as opposed to a crown section for the runway. That's going to drive most of the costs, and that's going to And those cost differences in large part are going to be due to additional stormwater needs if we actually go to the town section. So I think that's more to the question that you were asking, Chair Hanke.
Okay.
Is that
good? So I'd like to expand a little bit on that particular point because that's really not this first resolution, but like Eric said, they're kind of related. Mm-hmm. So on the second one, where it actually talks about doing two reports, one with a shed and one without.
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, wow, that sure is a lot of duplication of money being spent. You know, let's make one here, and I don't know how much each one of those is. I tried to read it out of that big printout, but I couldn't really put dollars to it. And then I read in there somewhere that we're now a B1 airport, and that it requires a 60-foot wide runway, but we're anticipating going to a B2, which requires a 75-foot runway. And I'm thinking to myself, well, If we're now B1 and we're anticipating a B2, and so we're keeping a 75 feet, which is of course going to be more money, would there be an advantage to doing the crown? In other words, at some point down the road, do we have to go graduate from a shed to a crown? And if that's the case, if we end up having to eventually go to a crown, we would be saving a bunch of money by not fooling around with the doing everything in duplicate by trying to spec out a shed.
You know, we have the good fortune of having Shannon sell up.
Right, I just looked at her to see.
Will be the project manager for Reed Middleton, so I defer to Shannon.
But I want to respond before you do, Shannon. And in answer to that, we are going down in our traffic usage, not up. So we are not going to make it to a B2. And so you may want to argue on that, but I mean, there's no evidence that says we're increasing the B2 airport.
Well, we just put Greg on, though. He's just starting.
Still learning how to fly.
Yeah, so at this point, there's nothing that we're aware of that would trigger going to a B2.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, I think to the future, but in working through the scope with the FAA and the port, we definitely have some very clear decision points along the way, and the FAA is on board with that. So that, you know, we get to, there's some instructions we're going to look at, there's the shed versus the crown, and then there's also the use. And so at any point where there's evidence or information that says, hey, we need to go to a different classification, or we need to go to a crown slope, irregardless, that's a decision point where we can stop, say, okay, what's the next best step forward, and adjust the grant with the FAA as needed. So there's quite a few decision points along the way, any which point we can stop, reevaluate, meet with the port, say, what do you want to proceed, what's the best for a long-term approach.
But for the short term, it looks like we're going to be doing two analyses. We're going to do a shed one and a, so we're going to pay for that twice, one for each one, for both the asphalt and for the drainage and for all this other. In other words, there's more than just one thing that gets done twice. There's several things that get done twice.
So this is just 30% design, so right. The shed is pretty much status quo. There's not a lot, you know, it's just repaved.
Mm-hmm.
It's the crown slope that we really need to look at. What are the implications? Stormwater, environmental, so that's really going to take the focus, and that's where, you know, the standard is to have a crown slope. But as we said, in the future, if not now, sometime in the far future, or I don't know when, we might not be able to get a mod to standard. Being able to get a mod to standard now is going to simplify things, but we just don't know yet what the FAA is going to approve.
So to be clear, there's a decision point that is built into the scope of services based on the FAA determination with respect to the request for the modification to standards.
You guys ready?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Motion?
I move we approve.
Yeah, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. B?
Move we approve.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Second?
Oops.
Yeah, second.
Yeah. Got that, Sue?
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. C.
Done.
Financials.
Financials. So in your packet, you have the May financial statements year to date, comparing to the same time period for 2016. just as a highlight, our revenues are below the prior year same time, although we're also below budget year to date, although rates weren't put into effect until April of this year for mortgage, and for the yard they weren't put into effect until May, so there's still an adjustment time, an adjustment period there. The operating expenses, we're also below budget, which is a good thing. And we are, you know, up compared to the prior year, although we had anticipated. You can see that just from the line items, that personnel, which was planned, you know, based on taking that next one-third from the salary survey. That's increased, plus LNI cost increases and pension increases. That's part of that line item also, as well as the outside services. Both those were planned, and personnel actually is below budget, but outside services is slightly above. Overall, I think we're doing pretty well considering the implementation of the rates, the timing of those. More will be revealed as the season goes on. But, you know, year to date, the net operating income is 168 before depreciation, which is good that it's positive. Not too much capital activity just yet, although we have a lot planned for the rest of the year. And then also principal payments. We had one in May and then another one at the beginning of next week. So we're almost there with our first of 2 years in large debt service payments, including interest. It's almost $1.5 million for both years, 17 and 18. So that'll help to get us out of some of our debt. And then just cash. Cash is hovering, and investments are hovering at about $3 million. It's down slightly from April, but still fairly good considering what we have planned. Do you have any questions?
Well, the marina here in the near future, we should be seeing somewhat of a significant increase with occupancy. And those occupancy numbers that we used to have didn't really reflect, in my opinion, what was truly there. And now that the efforts you guys are making with filling up all the slips, I'm sure that's going to, but that'll show an increase here in the near future.
Yeah, I know Greg's been working with TJ on that, and I anticipate probably by next year you guys will have some pretty robust reports showing, you know, our real capacity and our real, you know, filling them up.
Yep, looking forward to that.
Yeah, we're going to see we're going to see some benefit definitely this year in terms of how we conduct our business, especially with guest mortgage and booking out business up in the future. It seems fundamental, and it is,
And the other piece to keep in mind, too, I think I might have mentioned this before, but not in my narrative, was that the travel lift expenditures are in here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about $60,000, and we'll be reimbursed for that. So that affects the whole picture as well.
Mm-hmm. On the yard, do you, either Abigail or Greg, do you guys think this downturn is related to not having the capacity without a lift?
I think so. It's not like we're trying to turn away a lot of business. I think that there is a bit of a downturn in some of the business. I think we have to go out and get the business too. I mean, we have to go out actually and book the business. I've seen a couple of individual instances where, for a variety of reasons, you know, they had to turn around and they had issues with the vessels, for example, and then they had to leave and they just didn't come back. But we know they did the work, but they might have done it at other ports. So, but I think overall, there's no question that there's some issues with not having that travel, but just being able to move vessels around and having a comfort level, as well as in some ways, it's kind of fortuitous because we are going to have to do some work with them for the stormwater and with that whole project with graveling.
So you're going to business downturn as positive.
And there's been, one or two vessel launching delays as a result of not having the lift to be able to do it.
Yeah. But, it's one of those things with scheduling, how we can schedule it too, and we've got to change a little bit how we're doing that. Also, being more proactive with all the vessels in the yard to try to get that scheduled and get the feedback, as opposed to everybody all of a sudden they call up. Because the crew's been working overtime, standard overtime, to accommodate all the vessels coming and going. And there has been, we did talk to a number of customers, and they told me that they would love to come back and they want to stay here too. They want more here, and the commercial vessels. And they're pretty excited, and they do like, and they're pretty happy with it. I have to say, I'm getting a lot of positive feedback from the customers, both about Moorage and about the yard, in terms of just great attitudes, can do, and they, they're really motivated, focused on providing a value to the customers, which I think is good to hear, unsolicited and overt, feedback along that line. So we're getting there. We're, we're getting repositioned, and we're at full strength now in the yard too. So I think there was, some of those issues were getting resolved. So I feel like we have a, we hired two more people in, and they're definitely more qualified. So I think that whole dynamic is getting to turn it around, and we get the travel lift in. Of course, that's going to up morality all the way around. Right?
Good boy.
And
I would add that I think the other effect that it had is just it took a lot of organizational attention to actually just deal with the incident itself and all the follow-on, and it just, I don't want to say it was a distraction, but it was a level of effort that we didn't anticipate in some of our revamping of our business processes. And so, there are things that are just running at a delay. We're kind of kind of back on track of addressing a lot of those business processes and initiatives. And as well as I want to assure the commission, I know that we are still planning on doing a debrief with the insurance company at some point to say, okay, how did this go? What level of service did we receive in that aftermath of it? We just wanted to get the payments back, reimbursements, and then we'll do a debrief.
Do we get to give them a grade?
I think you get personally invited to give them a grade.
No, that's good. And I think, Greg, too, just to add the modeling that you're doing, I think it's going to make us more efficient as well in terms of where we're putting boats.
No question.
Oh, yeah. And I'm getting compliments too instead of complaints, which
right.
I'm really enjoying that. So.
Yeah.
You're smiling.
Yeah.
Since we're in that vein, I will tell you that I got a visit from one of our tenants, came in unsolicited, set up an appointment with Sue, and I wanted to look at another issue, and they came in and said, we're just sure you probably get feedback from a lot of different directions. They kind of phrased it a little differently. And we just came to tell you that, wow, can we see the difference in the level of customer service. They related a story that they had called the Moorage office and were asking for some accommodations for one of their customers to put them back in the water that was out of the ordinary. And the response they got was, it's not typically how we do it, but let me get back to you, and we're going to figure it out. And they're just, super pleased that we don't have the answer right now, we're going to get it for you. We're going to figure out how to work with you and your customers. So, we don't let that go to our heads too much, but we are receiving some positive feedback as well.
Okay. Anything else in the financials? Okay. Staff comments.
Great. I'll start. First of all, we do have our stormwater level 3 engineering report into the Department of Ecology. I just emailed them to see where they are at with their review. One of the main reviewer has been out of the office. He had started the review before he left. Still hoping to get that back within the next couple of days. So certainly by the next commission meeting, we'll be able to report out what type of feedback we got on the report. At the same time, we bring you for your consideration for the next commission meeting, a contract to follow on for Landau and Associates to take it from the engineering report into bid-ready documents for that that project. So the combination of those two contracts exceeds my authority, so I'll bring it to you for your consideration. We have been doing a lot of time consumed with our efforts for the Point Hudson planning process. As you are all aware, and I'm sure we'll be there tomorrow, we're having a collaboration meeting with the City of Port Townsend. We've also invited the Northwest Maritime Center, some board members on to participate in that. It will be a public meeting. We will not be taking public comment at that meeting. It's really an opportunity for you as electeds and board members to get to know each other, some both style differences, as well as setting the framework of how we're going to address the issues that we need to in the next coming months, and then making sure that it's crystal clear that we have a very real cash flow issue and addressing the jetty project, and so we'll be going over those numbers. You should have received a agenda from Kimberly, and she'll follow up with any other details that she has. The other thing that I'm working on is cash flow and capital projects, and we will be having at the July workshop a mid-year check-in that we've spoken in, and that's really a way for us to say, look at our goals that we set at the beginning of the year, what has ensued since then, where are we, do we need to make adjustments, how do we tweak things kind of mid-year here. With that, we'll also be going over cash flow for the capital projects that we do have moving forward this year, and reviewing that with the commission. We'll also be bringing forward, I'm not sure what will be the first meeting in July, the schedule for budget adoption and our budgeting process. We're already starting to set up schedule for business planning with the managers, and we'll be having internal meetings on that. I believe the first workshop that we have with the commission is the first workshop in August.
For budget,
exactly. We also are going to be we have established our first meeting with our bargaining unit, the Teamsters bargaining unit. Our contract expires at the end of this year, so we need to renew that contract, and are setting up a schedule to handle that. And this is a preview. I don't have too many details on this now. Did meet with the fire chief this week, and we are going to be renewing the lease with them at the for their little storage building at the airport. Previously, there had been an interlocal agreement that tied the payment for fire prevention services that the port pays to the fire district, and put the consideration for a lease in the same agreement. We're going to separate those two, agree to that in principle, that we will just have a interlocal or some type of contract for payment of for those services, and then we'll have a separate lease, and then we'll have those two things intermingled. And we also talk with them about, while their lease expires at the end of July of this year, we do a payment for those that's tied to a property tax collection. Basically, we're going to carry them into a holdover status for the remainder of this year. We'll have a new agreement for going into 2018. The other heads up that we have is that, and this is the part that I'm a little less clear on, there's this merger that's been happening between City of Port Townsend and fire services in East Jefferson County, now is Jefferson County Fire and Rescue. And all of that, as they kind of meld their organizations, is going to come out into consideration and payment for fire services for port property within the city limits. And so I don't have any details other than that's going to be coming in likely 2020, I think was the year that he gave me. It could have been 2019. So we'll be working that through, but just wanted to start putting that on our radar screens. We'll be looking for some type of payment structure for those services.
Is the moorage of the fire boat going to be any part of these discussions?
Thank you for reminding me that, yes. We gave them a moorage agreement for the fire boat, and they're going to take it back and get some approval, and we expect payment on that beginning in July of this year.
So have there been moorage for it, or no? Just with three?
There's not been a payment for moorage of the fire boat.
Sheriff too.
Sheriff as well. Right. And so we have, we don't have a signed agreement yet with the sheriff, but they have it in hand, and so we should be getting that here shortly.
So back to the combined compensation to the fire department for fire services and the lease, now that we're breaking it up, do we know how much that compensation for the fire department was You know, do we have any ideas, like $200,000, $10,000?
What we have been paying for fire protection services for the airport properties is in the neighborhood of $9,100, something like that. We were meant to be given a 10% discount on that for consideration of the lease. I typically don't like to combine things like that. I just like to have cleaner agreements. So we have a lease, that's a lease, you pay that, we pay for services. One of the issues that we're going to face is because the airport properties themselves are tax exempt, the assessor doesn't kind of do the same process on valuation for them. So that's one of the discussion points that we'll have with the fire department of how do we get that valuation and then consequently calculate the payment for fire services.
So do we have a payment that we make to them for the marina, Boathaven?
Not for it, no.
Okay, because I know that they asked in the past for $200,000, mm-hmm. and I just mm-hmm. wasn't sure if eliminating the free slip and separating the lease for the storage unit is going to reinstitute the $200,000 ask.
I think the payment for services for fire protection services is going to come regardless of whether or not we have a mortgage agreement with them. I think that is the issue that is going to come forward. We've talked with Carolyn about it, so there's lots to consider. We'll work it through. You know, that's going to be a couple of years before we get to the city limits ones. But for now, for the airport, that should be a fairly straightforward calculation. That's it for me.
Mainly working on a variety of different leases in terms of due diligence and tracking down some of the documentation, make sure we thoroughly understand it. We did been also working on the stormwater project and moving that forward, get that implemented and executed with Mark Horton and Terry Kyle, the yard manager. In Quilcene, we had pharmacology. They did an inspection for the level 4 fuel facility today, spot inspection, and we got a clean bill of health for that, as well as I believe that we got a clean bill of health for the Boathaven facility, which we actually, you know, we somewhat that out. So that's good news. Last year, you know, they found a few things. We didn't get fined or anything on that line, but we addressed each and every issue, so we should be moving forward.
Is the airport subject to that too? Can they do a spot inspection at the airport?
You know, they should. Yeah. They should. Yeah, they could. But you know, maybe they just wasn't on the radar. And speaking of which, you know, we are going through the due diligence now with the pollution liability insurance. Association, whatever. So we're going through with the state, PLIA, to go over the due diligence for the USD, and that's in process right now.
So in Quilcene, wasn't there an issue with the tank getting rusty at some point? And
yeah, but we had them inspected, and we blind tested everything every year. But it's going to get to the point where we might want to either replace the tank, you know, swap them out with, or get them retrofitted. We'll have to take a look at that.
In other words, that didn't get repaired last year. That's still an issue, but it's just not bad enough that it warrants replacement right now.
Well, they were inspected, and they came up with the valve, you know, the valve handles. Mm-hmm. We've worked on those as the piping. Any issue that they give us, they documented, and they went over everything. Believe me, we've addressed every single issue. But, you know, it's just one of those things where at some point the tank starts getting older, and you go, okay, maybe we should look at replacing it. Or at least retrofitting. So we'll work on that with maintenance.
So back to the issue with the USD at the airport, could you explain a little further this process with the insurance company? I mean, so basically you're working through them to hopefully insurance will cover replacement of USD or at least removable and
replacement. So right now we're going through the due diligence, which they hired out a consultant the state does on contract. Then they have the money that's already allocated and they're approved for, and I think it's up to $150,000. And that is for a complete assessment of repair and replacement. And so then we have to go through some of the impacts of the fueling facility, you know, trying to do evaluation of that. They've actually hired on an appraiser. And so we're just kicking off that whole process. But we met with them a couple times out there with a consultant. We're moving forward, and then what they'll do is they're going to go through the kind of cost benefit and everything, And then what they'll do is they'll rank them. They'll rank all the projects. I think we had 43 applications, and they'll rank them throughout. And that will be, if let's just say, however many they approve for this go-around, then if we're kicked into next year, we'll just be in that consecutive order, and then we move to the top. Mm-hmm. So we got in at the very, you know, front end of this, and so that's basically how they just determine. Because it's going to be it's a super thorough, robust due diligence process. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing borings and everything on that one.
Great.
Yeah, just to be sure. Mm-hmm. But we don't anticipate that there's any issues with that, but they just want to be absolutely certain. Mm-hmm. So exactly, that would be part of the scope of the repair. And obviously, if they find an issue, they're close to groundwater and that kind of thing, they're probably going to move up the chain immediately. But I think right now we're just starting off the process.
So they can actually enter the tank to do this? Do they have to be emptied? And is it the ultrasound or?
That I don't know. What they're doing is they're going to do the borings, they'll do all the soil samples around the tank. They're going to do the visual inspections. I'm sure they're going to be doing some, but I don't know that exact scope. Mm-hmm. But I can get a hold of it and have the board and look at it. They have $150,000 of budget just to assess this. That doesn't include any monies to actually do mm-hmm. the other work. So I think it's going to be pretty thorough. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Does Reed get involved in this at all?
We do not do storage tanks.
I mean, as far as your contract and looking at the runway and all of that, is there any crossover? Probably not, I guess.
Not that I can. I think it's kind of standalone.
Yeah.
The state hired a firm called G-Logix to do the work. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
So my big project right now is the collaboration workshop for tomorrow. So just wanted to expand a little bit on what Director Gibney had mentioned earlier. The main objective tomorrow is for us to go over the past work that's been done regarding planning for Point Hudson, just a small snippet of it, and then really spend the rest of the time with commissioners and city council members and representatives from the Maritime Board, getting to know each other a little bit more on a personal level. Having some collaboration group activities, thinking about maybe things that happened in the past, what's happening in the future, what can I bring to the table sort of thing. And then we'll go over 6 strategies for collaboration that I think everybody will find very useful just in life in general. But as we've been talking about collaboration in the port, it just so happens that Point Hudson is the most, I would say, what were we saying today? It's the best opportunity for us to exercise collaboration. So collaboration is just good overall with elected officials and community members to make sure we're bringing all different ideas to the table. And it just so happens that the most relevant subject at this time is Point Hudson. So Director Gibney had also mentioned that there is not going to be an opportunity for public comment tomorrow. And I just wanted to point out that that's because the fundamental purpose of the workshop is for the commissioners and the council members and representatives from the board to get to know how to work with each other. So it's not a workshop where we're actually focusing on taking input for what happens at Point Hudson, but maybe how we can address some issues and working together in the future. So there'll be plenty of opportunity for public comment at other venues, but it's really for the 3 groups to work together and mix it up a little bit. So I think it'll be fun.
So would be a representative from Ma Foster there?
No, we're doing this one on our own. Okay. Yeah.
So the workshop will not be recorded. There will be very general minutes that come out that basically say this is what happened. It's not going to get down to word for word. Commissioner Hinkie said this, and then blah 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 blah. That you should have received an agenda by now. It's been posted on our website as well as our Facebook page. The meeting has been publicly noticed by us as well as the City Council. And to my understanding, the Maritime Board doesn't need to do that because they're not an elected governing board.
So you can have this on Facebook too?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good job.
How many people here are friends with us on Facebook?
I am. People don't use Facebook.
And just a side note on communications, if you haven't had the opportunity to read the leader today, There is an excellent article in there about Summer Martell. Our very own Chris Tucker wrote it. It's a fabulous article about, for I think many of you probably know Summer. I know Sue has known her for quite some time, but she's going to be doing an aerobatic show at the Arlington Fly-In July 7th through 9th. This is the first time in 13 years that she's done one. So she's out at JCIA all the time. She is a private pilot. She worked, I think, for a commercial airline at some point. Amazing story, amazing woman. It's just kind of nice to be able to have bragging rights when she hails from Fort Townsend in Jefferson County. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at the reader, it's a great article.
So,
you know, I this is going to sound a bit like Groundhog Day. I know it's felt that way. I'll just let you know that everything is pointing towards the July 5 deadline for submission of the port's voting infrastructure grant application for the North Jetty demolition and replacement as a separate standalone project. We received word just earlier today from RCO that our requested amendment to the existing contract has been authorized by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, so we are able to downscope the agreement that we have them with them to focus solely on the South Jetty, and then make application as we are for a separate standalone project for the North demolition and replacement. There's an awful lot that goes into this. I won't bore you, except to say that right now I think the running tally of required attachments and narrative is like 27 exhibits, something like that. So they don't make getting federal monies particularly easy. And this again is a highly competitive program. So I want to make sure that everyone understands we don't want to be assuming that this money is in the bank at all. This remains. Hope for funding that we're making every effort to obtain, but I would caution simply because there, I think the last time, last year, and I think the appropriation is almost the same this year, less than $12 million available nationwide in this program. So you can imagine that it's highly competitive. Nevertheless, as a corollary along with that grant deadline, which is July 5, we're also working on developing the final contract, scope of services, and fee with Coast of Harbor, now Mott McDonald, for 100% engineering design, and again, helping us become bid ready. We're still hopeful that we can be bid ready for the South Jetty in January of 2018. And as a corollary to that, we're also moving ahead with, we've submitted our Joint Aquatic Resources Program application for the marine borings that are necessary for basically to get the best information we possibly can on the subsurface conditions there. I think we'd rather be cautious and thorough in the engineering and design work up front in the hopes that we can save money and the construction costs on down the road. So we have that JARPA app. I think we actually received the JARPA application today as well. So this has been sort of a good day for news concerning the city. But we have yet to obtain the letter of exemption from the city of Fort Townsend, as well as the SEPA exemption letter. So we're working on that. So we'll hopefully have something to tell you about other than the jetty at the next meeting.
Who bears the boring costs on the JARPA?
We have Allison Reek of Sea Run Consulting under contract presently to do the permitting for that. And that was a contract that was approved earlier this year, actually, in anticipation of this work. The actual cost of conducting the borings once they're permitted, that will be wrapped into the phase two engineering with Mott McDonald. They will likely retain a subconsultant for that work. That's it for now.
What's your track record over the last 3 years on grants? Have you missed one?
I know what I don't like to say is that we're batting a thousand.
He's very good. You're doing a great job, Eric. We really appreciate what you're doing. Thanks. Abigail?
Yeah, so good to be back. Missed the last meeting. I was at the WPPA Finance Director meeting up in Semiahmoo. It was a really great conference. A lot of good information. SAO did the GASB updates, which are the Government Accounting Standards Board. They're the ones that kind of dictate how you need to report on your financial statements and what you need to report and all those details. And they're going crazy. There's so many standards that are coming out in the next few years. It's daunting. But SAO is really helpful with, you know, assisting with that and make sure you know, fully understand it. Also discussed pension funding. There's a rep from DRS kind of explaining what's going on with the increased rates because they kind of keep ratcheting up. And that's part of the recognition that they recently had mortality assumptions that were changed, and then also has to do with market and the fact that PERS 1, and that includes TERS 1, PSERS 1, and all the ones, is which is it's a pension that is no longer being used by active employees unless you're really old and you still are out there. But it ended like, they think they closed it in 77. But so those people, that those one levels are way underfunded, and so the rest of us are paying for it. Similar to Social Security, I guess. But, I mean, with some of that bad news, I mean, the good news is that Washington State is one of the best funded of state and government funded pensions, so that's good news. So we will be seeing some increases this year and next year, and kind of play it by ear from there. Another piece was about how to manage difficult people, which is always great reminders on tips on efficient and effective communication, which is your area. Economic Development Administration, they talked about their grants that are available and where to go to look at what's available and the 9 different programs they have. You know, typically their match is about 50%, but if you're a critically distressed area and you can go look on the website to find out what counties are critically distressed, then you can get, you know, a 25% match if you get, you know, that grant. So that was all good information. Asset management, went over that. A guy from DOE was there. Talking about it and kind of, you know, what we're doing now. I mean, doing an assessment, what do we have, what state is it in, and what are we going to have to do with breaks? I mean, just really simple. And then, you know, he kind of expanded on that in terms of, you know, current state of assets, what's the level of service or use of those assets, what are the critical assets, and what are kind of independent of each other, those assets that might, you know, if one breaks down, it's going to affect another asset kind of thing. And then looking at a minimum life cycle and a long-term funding plan. So I think that's something that we're working on, started with, you know, Al looking at the infrastructure with Larry and maintenance. And so, you know, we're on the path with developing that. It was a really good conference. and then there are the pros and cons of being your own treasurer. Because I think you're aware that ports have the option of being their own treasurer. We are not. So the county is our treasurer. And that was just interesting to kind of know the differences, the pros and cons. They had 3 panels there, 3 panel members, one from Seattle, one Camus Washougal, and one from Edmonds, and they're all treasurers. So they talked about why they changed and, you know, what the pros and cons were. And that was interesting and good learning, too, on some of the tips that they had.
Did it make you want to change?
Somewhat. I mean, I definitely want to consider it, but I don't feel like we're really in a position right now that it makes a whole lot of sense, basically from staffing, because there's management. There's a whole lot of more management that you have to do. I mean, just like yesterday, I prepared a debt service transfer for the county, and they'll do the transfer, and they'll wire the money, and, you know, they'll make the payment, and so they're doing most of the work, and I just kind of send them an email. But there is more control that you have. But we don't have a whole lot of money either. If we had more money to, like, invest, then definitely. And that might be down the road.
Well, is there a cost benefit to using the services as opposed to having the staff?
Yeah, there probably is. You know, one of the things that Edmund said is that the reason they changed is because the county kept screwing up their transactions. And so it was like, okay, so we haven't had that problem. I mean, we've been very fortunate. You know, our county is, we've got, you know, long-term employees there, and they know what they're doing, and they, you know, can be relied upon. So we really haven't had any issues with the county. And what they charge us is nothing. I mean, they charge us a safekeeping fee.
See, now you
like,
said that, they're going to up our
fee. Yeah, right?
Don't write that down.
But anyway, yeah, it's something to consider down the road once we start, you know, kind of, I don't know, I see as, you know, the garden grows a little bit more as we till it and we actually have some money to invest, and then maybe that would be a decision to be made, but certainly not now.
Yeah, those three ports you mentioned have money to invest.
They do. Yeah, especially Seattle. Talked about employee incentive programs. They brought up Seattle there, too, because of an audit finding. But what not to do. And that was interesting. I already knew about that piece. Talked about some Public Records Act reform. Talked about a couple of the changes in state law regarding contracting, regarding small works bonding, and also responsible bidder criteria, which are going to affect pretty shortly, within the month. And then what they started off, this is the last thing, but what they started off with was cybersecurity risks. That started the whole conference, and it got everybody so, like, paranoid. But it was really good. I mean, they talked about mitigation of risks. They talked about, you know, phishing and how profitable it is. That it's like, I think Verizon puts out a report annually that, you know, talks about data breaches. And like 30% of phishings are successful. And they said, in fact, it's so successful, they have phishing services firms that have customer service. Mm-hmm. So you can, yeah, I mean, if you want to make money the bad way, I was just amazed at that. Anyway, they talked about mitigation of some of those things, like, okay, so what policy and procedure do you have in place when an email comes out, and who do you contact, how do you contact them, you know, all sorts of stuff. And that was really interesting and something I'd like to implement.
Yeah, we just recently had a few of those.
Yeah, I saw it. Here was on Monday.
Oh, there's some large corporations being held hostage.
The ransomware?
Yeah.
It's kind of scary, so. And we've been talking to IT about that recently anyway, since that recent ransomware, the WannaCry or something, and they were talking about, you know, I've been talking to them about, you know, I want to make sure that every one of our computers has its updates, because Microsoft is notorious for being easy to crack open. And that's been the main problem with a lot of these ransomwares, is that people don't do their security updates ever. And so, you know, they're really wide open for risk. So, anyway, IT's looking at that, too, with our computers. So. And then other than that, just going to be prepared next time to talk about the draft budget schedule, which Sam had already mentioned. Also looking at the mid-year update, which, you know, just basically looking at where we are today with staffing and then projecting for the rest of the year based on that staffing level, where we are, and the same with other costs that were projected. And and linking that with capital.
Just a note that Sam will be attending the WPPA Directors Conference July 13th and 14th, and Brad and Steve will be attending the WPPA Commissioners Conference July 24th, 25th.
That's peer pressure to get me to go.
That's all.
It's close.
You guys will do it.
Commissioner, I don't usually get to talk in public, but.
Oh, yes.
But.
Your staff.
Exactly. Right. But I thought I would just remind everybody, if you haven't seen the memo or that on June 8th this year, the Washington Supreme Court issued a decision that very much impacted Open Public Meetings Act and drilling in on the real estate exemption that allows us to go into executive session. What they've done is they've narrowed that exception a lot to focus just on price. I mean, they're being very black and white about reading the language. And so that means that when you go into what executive sessions can now be used for is only discussion on the price, not any of the terms that impact price, not mags or length of term or contributions, credit worthiness of who you're dealing with. All that has to be a public discussion. After you've aired that in public, you can go into exec session and have a brief discussion on how that may impact price, but it's somewhat of a seismic shift. So I think all those ports are, and it was a Port of Vancouver was the example, so.
Yeah.
So we'll be modifying a bit.
Is there any prospect for an amendment to the statute?
Boy, I think, well, I'm certainly rallying that cry, and I did get some positive feedback with some of the larger ports where I think it's going to impact a lot more, but we'll see. But that's at least a year away, mm-hmm. of course, because of where we are in the legislature right now.
I think WPPA is developing its strategy and response as well, so
good
to hear more from them
good.
In the coming months.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Commissioner comments. Public comments. Sorry. Public comments. Anybody? Now's your time to air away. George.
Well, it's not really a comment. It's kind of a question. When we identified the numbers for the haulouts and things like that, my question is, this is a symbiotic relationship between your infrastructure, the haulouts and the yards, and the marine trades. And the thing that I'd like to understand is, are the marine trade businesses, are they at full capacity right now? If they're not, why not? And what's the relationship in terms of marketing between the port and the marine trades going after that business?
Well, you guys answer that.
I'll take that. George, we're looking at, when we talk about shifting some of our business processes and how we work with our partner tenants is doing a lot of that, knowing their businesses much better and understanding how they are remaining profitable and really aligning our business interests. So I'd say that's a work in progress. As you know, we're doing a lot of lease audits at this point and visiting a number of our key tenants to, again, align those interests both in how we price things, but then how we can do some co-marketing. Some initial steps that we have done towards that and are like some of the advertising that we're doing in some of the magazines that we're doing a co-branding where we're saying, you know, come to Port of Port Townsend, and here's a feature a project from one of our tenants. That's still fairly simple at this point. As we move into more sophisticated marketing efforts, we'll be developing things of how do we get a lot of repeat customers, how do we help, you know, kind of book out that business, you know, even a couple of years in advance. So your question is well regarded. It's one that we have internal, and it's a work in progress at this point.
Yeah.
That's it.
Sam, the thing I'm concerned about right now is I've talked to Lee Erickson about marine trades, and they are not as united as they have been in the past. And I think if there's any way that we can help them strengthen their organization so that they're speaking as one voice, It's not happening right now. And I'm sure that affects right down to what boats are coming in for haulouts and things like that. They're not just local boats. We cannot survive if it's all on local boats that we're depending on. It's the whole market out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just very concerned about them as an organization.
Mm-hmm. Let me make a little comment on that.
Sure.
Well, the Marine Trades Association made a unanimous decision to basically table efforts to have an organization for the time being, as they didn't feel that it was a necessity at this time. But however, they still have a budget, and there's still some members that are following what's happening, and if they see a need to reconvene, then they're certainly going to do that.
Speaking for myself, George, I think a marketing plan is crucial,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
we've brought on staff to facilitate that plan, mm-hmm. and so it's in the works.
Yeah.
But it's definitely
to serve all the players.
It's mm-hmm. crucial, and mm-hmm. yeah, Bill.
Yeah, I'm kind of following up on George's line. I think it would be really helpful to the commission if maybe periodically the marine trades were pulled to find out, you know, where their businesses are, what sorts of things that the port has done has impacted positively or negatively with the marine trades. Mm-hmm. Thinking about the travel specifically, you know, how we know kind of from the numbers, we can kind of infer a little bit that the travel lift hurt the port's bottom line, but it would be interesting, I think, to know going forward, you know, what kind of impact that kind of a problem has on the businesses, since the port is really operating on behalf of economic development and operating for those businesses in addition to the public interest in general.
I actually think that's a pretty good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
to have, like, maybe Kimberly, you just query the tenants, major tenants, mm-hmm. and how's it going, and then give us kind of a status report that we could review mm-hmm. at a commission meeting maybe once a month or something. That'd really be great. Mm-hmm. I mean, we kind of hear it through hearsay, you know, if I walk in the co-op or something. But
I think there's also some changes in the makeup of, you know, where each of these businesses are at now, as mm-hmm. opposed to historically. Like, how are they positioning themselves? So, you know, some of them are pretty mature and they're looking at moving on or retiring or doing different things. So it's not, you know, it isn't then like, you know, if we were all in our 40s or 30s or 50s even, you know, sometimes so there's going to be a transition, I think, is what we're going to see, which is a natural one. And they all have it in mind, and of course, they don't have it, you know, if you ask them, they always have a defined plan going ahead. They're working on it, but it's really actually unfolding right now, I think, just because they're kind of a lot more hitting a critical time in their lives. Not all of them, but, and then what we're doing is, like, there are certain capabilities that they felt were really critical. So, you know, we've pursued a corrosion, painting, blasting companies, and then we signed PYR. They don't really compete, per se, with actually the existing tenants. They actually complement them. They should drive business to the marine trade, significant business to them. And they actually target different market sectors that we aren't really representing that significantly, for instance, like the military contracts. So, we, you know, we're trying to diversify. We're trying to get blue chip tenants to come in. And so, you know, we're making kind of direct, conscious decisions about how we develop business going forward. But there's not, I wouldn't say that I have like a cohesive, part of the lack of cohesion is partly because there are many and are in different places. Some of them, you know, a number of them I've talked to, they felt like, hey, we have months of business booked out, 8 months of business booked out, for example. And other people go, hey, we're interested in any business you can bring in here. So, and then there's certain critical functionality, you know, functions and trades that we feel that we've identified that we know that we could probably strengthen by attracting businesses here. But, you know, that takes a little bit of time and effort. but
My thought was that if the court asked the question on a regular basis, that it would generate, you know, even the first time around, you might not get exactly what you want,
yep.
But as people start to think that this is something the court's going to do on a regular basis, that's some more interesting information.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I think the general temperature in the yard is a little flat, just from what I've been reading. My sales are down about 7% this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a kind of, the general economy, the weather, the travel is certainly having help. Boats need money. I'm flat despite a lot of improvements. The space, the underutilized capacity has always been high. In my letter to you, I think some of the customers that have been here in the spring, the rate increase I think is going to affect a percentage of the people and the fishermen that were here that have just left for the season. Some of them are exploring options, whether it be Oregon, whether it be Everett, whether it be Alaska. I've encouraged everybody who talks to me, and I get hundreds of customers. I've got a regular email I sent to them with all your contact information. Mm-hmm. Just say, tell me your story.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that. I don't know if anybody's contacted you mm-hmm. through that means. But...
Not that I know of. I think that, it's interesting that, the yard rate actually didn't increase. So, if you're staying for more than 30 days.
Sure,
so,
sure. Shave and a haircut for somebody coming in.
Okay.
The time constraints, I did have a couple of customers tell me they were leaving on their original scheduled date, they would have stayed,
mm-hmm.
but they did leave because they had that date down and the flexibility wasn't there necessarily to get them out, but
sure.
They didn't take that date.
Okay.
So. Mm-hmm. And then it'd be just interesting down the line to just see numbers of folks, going year over year comparison of month to month comparison down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in one vote, talk to the channeler on the dock as he was leaving. He'd be powered at the co-op. Spent about $300,000 in the community in 50 days. Outside money here.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of those is just something that should be
checked
in.
So was he happy when you talked to him at the dock?
He was great. Yeah, good. He's going to fish for 22 months and then spots him about $500,000. And he doesn't really want to do that. But he was generally happy.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah. Towards the end, too, the news tells us that there is an agreement in principle in Olympia on a operating budget, and no details are out yet. No news on when a capital budget might follow. The streamlining commission at our last check, our request for the integrated planning grant that would also help us do some business planning was still in the capital budget, but fingers crossed, we haven't seen it yet. So, not quite sure if there could be an awful lot of shuffling at the last minute.
Any more public comments? Here.
Yeah, regarding the fire department payments or assessment or whatever you talked about earlier, the airport may be tax exempt, but there is a whole bunch of privately owned hangars that are built on ground lease from the port, and each one of them has a tax parcel and pays taxes. So that's something the fire department and everybody needs to keep in mind when they stick their hand out, I guess.
They do keep it in mind, and it's still there.
So the condo associations have tax parcels.
Well, my particular unit, I own my hangar unit in my condo group, and I get a property tax bill every year.
Gotcha.
I believe the building you're in is owned by a corporation with nine hangars and nine shareholders. So the corporation gets the property tax bill, but
okay.
Just like on a house,
the new hangars on the other side get taxed individually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other comments?
Just like to add to Greg, I'm in my 40s. I think you addressed the different changes.
Are you the only person
in
I purchased a business 2.5 years ago now. It was an established business, but there are people that not everybody's leaving, and most of the people that are leaving are being replaced by somebody.
They are, but there, you know, there's a number of people in that talk that are getting pulled down. We're transitioning. So all I'm saying is that because there's a cross section, it's not like it's homogeneous, you know, makeup. So that when you talk to, if I talk to Pete or I talk to you, right, you get three different answers.
Sure.
It's not like they're not all going to agree, like, this is where I'm at in life. So there's not, you know, it's a little more sophisticated when it's on an individual basis that you have to deal with them on what their needs are.
So we want to talk about Abigail's adjustments to mortality assumptions.
They're not mine.
Okay, no more public comments. Moving to commission comments. Steve.
Okay, I went to the Quilcian Beach Party with, who all went? Greg and Sam. And it was a wonderful party. It was a lot of people there. I think that the first one was a big one because it was the first one, but I think that this was bigger than last year's, and it was well attended, and it was like the thing in Quilcian. It was wonderful. And I was excited to see.
I had good intentions.
Yeah. Oh, you had a bad either, right? Yeah. I was excited to see all the people there and the participation, and it was just really neat to see that our facility in Quilcian is actually doing some really good. The energy lunch was a really interesting one. It was about waste recovery. This fellow, Philip Schmidt Patman, had been doing waste recovery, meaning solid waste. And he's from Germany, and in Europe, landfills are illegal. You can't have them anymore. And so they've had to figure out what to do with all the solid waste. And so they've been companies that take care of it, and they'll separate it into recyclable things and burnable things, and then they burn the burnables, and they generate energy with it, and they also generate heat that they then pipe into things that use the heat. So he's talked to us once before, and there was quite a bit of interest in there. There was a former county commissioner from Coahuila County and a PUD commissioner and some other people there, and it was really an interesting concept that I think would actually work well in our area that the NODC covers, which is Clallam and Jefferson County, because in there we discussed that you have to have a certain critical amount of waste to make the capital investment pay off and to get the energy. So this afternoon I called Karen. I wasn't able to go to the NODC meeting this week because I was, or last week, I was in Canada. And she suggested that they could look at a grant to study the feasibility, because there's several people interested in the whole peninsula. Because basically, the way it works, just so I can give a short synopsis, is you don't have to pay to have your garbage hauled away like we're doing now. It gets hauled to Oregon and stuck on the ground, and it creates a big sore, a festering sore there for the rest of its life. And they take it and burn it and turn it into recycle, and it ends up making money. So they were going to do a feasibility study for the peninsula to see if there's sufficient waste to be generated and what the trade-offs would be. So she's looking at doing a grant for that. And I was suggesting that the place...
And who was this again?
Karen Afield. She's the new director. She took Kate Dean's place when Kate became a county commissioner. She's now the NODC director. And so she's going to be looking at that in the future. But like I said, there was quite a bit of interest in the group. And what that kind of brings to mind is this is precisely the flavor of what that was a zone for, an eco-industrial park. So another thing about the NODC that I wasn't able to attend, the one that I was gone, when I was talking to Karen this afternoon, she said their last group of people was a fiber producers group that need a place. And they want to have all the fiber producers, the people that have sheep and fiber producing animals, want a place to get together to process. And so there's so many things coming up that could actually utilize the airport property and would actually be symbiotic in the fact that there's waste that could then be utilized in this waste processing facility at the same time. So I'm thinking that it's really an interesting time to start thinking about how to utilize that property as we get the infrastructure done. And I got thinking, we're always to the same point. We come up to that, wow, we could really do that if we had some infrastructure in it. I think it's time to start thinking about infrastructure, seriously. I mean, I realize that right now all the oxygen is being taken by these two big initiatives. We don't have a lot of time for other stuff, but getting the timber off and would be a moneymaker. And it would get the ball rolling and would be able to see what goes where. So anyway, those are the three things that I did. Energy Lunch, NODC, and Beach Party.
Well, I had a question to you, Steve. I mean, I went to that same seminar there at the Energy Lunch, and one thing I felt was seriously lacking was there was no data. And there was absolutely no, he gave a lot of examples of various places around the world on where they put these plants together to basically don't bury anything anymore. Mm-hmm. But there was no examples of timing associated with a return on investment. And I was really kind of frustrated with that because I thought that's where the rubber meets the road.
Right.
And if they do this again, hopefully that they can come back with some mm-hmm. real numbers because, you know, that's all part of the process.
Right.
And, you know, to do a feasibility study, they have absolutely, they didn't prevent or present any kind of information in regards to return on investment.
He did the first time he spoke about 3 years ago, and it put everyone in the room to sleep. Basically, that's right, you were there. If you recall, I asked him, I said, well, what do we do now? And he said, well, you figure out if there's enough raw materials around here to do it, and then you give it to us, and then we go through and we'll do an assessment on the return on the investment, basically. And that's what the feasibility study is to pay for, to figure out this thing pencils out and give you actual numbers. And it's not because the thing I like about it is that it's not a pie in the sky thing. Like, I've been really excited about ammonia generation for a long time, and I realize that it's too far out to get serious about. But this is like a place all over the world, and here in the United States, so it's not like they just have to make up numbers. They get them, and they say, well, this is the results you get. If you have this much input, this much capital cost, this is what you get. And so if we can figure out an agreement or if there's interest here, if there's sufficient raw materials, then that's what you get when you talk to them as a result of the study. Is what you're asking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, hopefully next time there'll be some folks from Jefferson County there that partaking and asking appropriate questions.
Yeah, well,
one of these in Marysville?
I think the one in Marysville is that Tulalipin. Yeah. Yeah, that's a liquid waste. And that's another one that could actually go in conjunction with it. We had those people come over. They have a bigger area to draw from. They're taking the liquid waste from several dairies, and they're processing that into a fertilizer and also into methane and making electricity. But they're also taking liquid waste from, like, old grocery store soda bottles that go out of date, and they're taking it all up and down the I-5 corridor. So they have a huge area to draw from, and they're just making money hand over fist. They're making and plus they did it to clean the river up, and they've cleaned the river up. No affluence from the dairies going there anymore, but they've also just made a lot of money for the tribes.
I'm good.
You're good?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, for the record, thank you for the card. I had knee surgery for the audience, and staff gave me a great card. I'm very appreciative of that. And so, doing well with that. Sam and I went to a dinner with the Northwest Maritime Center just to kind of kick off the collaboration event, kind of test it out a little bit, see how we didn't end up walking away, so that was good. Had a good meal. And I'm encouraged. You know, I think it's a long road to go. I think the vision of the Maritime Center possibly doing something with Point Hudson maybe has merit. I mean, we'll just see. I mean, there's a lot of paper that needs to be turned over in terms of what everybody is thinking about. I have to say, I really was impressed with Jim Darling, mm-hmm. the moderator. And he did an excellent job of keeping all of the parties kind of on track and not kind of getting off on tangents. So, yeah, it was a very productive meeting, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, see what happens with City Council and Maritime Center Board. I think that's it for me. So with that, we will move into executive session. And we're going to be going into executive session pursuant to 42.30.110 to discuss with court legal counsel litigation of potential litigation to which the court commission, or a member acting as an official capacity counsel is or is likely to become a party. And we should be doing that for about 15 minutes. So, and I need to put it in. And no decision.